With it being Q4, this time of the year is often called the magic quarter. Understanding how and why customers buy is key to winning and being successful in your career. In this episode, we dive into the mindset of customers and discuss what you need to know and what skills to master to make your Q4 the most wonderful time of the year. Welcome to Sales Burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! The premier podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs. With your host, Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Siles. Tuning in to the next episode of Sales Burrito. With me, as always, is Enrique Barreto.
You know, you continue to impress me. You are going to get a bachelor's degree in rolling your R's, my friend. It sounds perfect.
Better late than never, you know. I guess if you're going to master it, might as well be Q4. And it's kind of that Super Bowl time of year, so I'll take it. How you doing?
Q4, I'm doing great. Looking, obviously, the end of the year is approaching. As the intro suggests, right, Q4 is the magic quarter. I mean, it is a quarter of dreams. If you're a sales engineer, whether you're a great sales engineer or a good sales engineer, typically Q4, you're doing pretty good. Would you agree or disagree?
I would. Yeah. I'd say it's not only the quarter of dreams, it's the quarter of Lamborghinis and Ferraris, right?
Hey, now we're talking. Yeah, there you go. Now we're talking.
But no, you know, a lot of sales teams, you know, they're working hard on large opportunities and many customers, you know, they understand that we sell for the Q4 and they're there holding that budget to the end of the year, looking for that last deal as well. So Really when it all comes together, it really is the most wonderful time of the year for everybody involved. You know, but, as coming from the customer side earlier in my career and you yourself, you know, I think it's always important if you haven't walked a mile in the customer's shoes to at least have an understanding of where the customer's coming from, what the customer's thinking, well, how and why they buy. And so, you know, the reason for this episode is really just to kind of help, you know, the SEs that are going maybe earlier in their career or have come into the profession, you know, straight into sales and they never were on the customer side. Help them understand some of those skills that they need to be able to understand the mindset of a customer and then how they can master how the customer thinks. And Obviously at the end of the day, how the customer buys. And that's it's kind of our rundown for the show today.
No, I agree. Listen, I think that if we start from the top, right, you know, sales engineers definitely have some skill sets, not only in Q4, but any quarter, right? When it comes to understanding and knowing the mind of the customer, right? I'll mention a couple of them. I'm sure that you agree and disagree with some of these stuff, but I will start with active listening. Active listening to me is super important. And it almost is equally important to have active visuals, right? What do I mean by that? You're walking into a customer, whether it's a Zoom session or a video session, or you're going into their office, you're looking around. You want to be able to actually gather a sense for what's in the room, whether it's on their office or where there is in a conference room, to be able to actually have, you know, be able to pick up on different things that might help you gain their trust, right? Active listening for me is to ensure that, and when it comes to sales, he who talks the most typically loses. You want to have those open-ended questions that will make the consumer talk a lot and be able to actually give you as many details as possible so you can be in a better position. What do you think?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, yeah, there was a reason God gave you two ears and one mouth, right? It's a ratio scale that's kind of built into your physiologically, you know, body. So I agree with you. Absolutely. You know, I think, on top of that, you know, if you're doing really good active listening, you're building really that next most important piece that, you know, that credibility and that rapport that you need to have with your customer. You know, people buy from people they trust, you know, and really, if you're in that early part of the relationship with the customer, building that credibility is key. You know, they also have to be able to depend on you. You know, you got to feel that you're not only knowledgeable what you're talking about and that you're trustworthy, but that you're also going to be reliable, because, you know, no one wants to buy from somebody who's going to love them and leave them, right? It's got to be, you're building a relationship. And really, when you're getting into a selling situation with a customer, you really got to think about it from that perspective. And, you know, there are numerous ways to kind of break it down. But I think probably the easiest way is just maybe to go through, you know, a couple of customer stories where, you know, when you build that relationship with a customer and you have that inherent trust, you really are building kind of three things in my mind. You know, the first is obviously, you know, the rapport that you need to build this initial sale. Mm-hmm. But then you're also building a built-in reference base, because you're going to go back to that customer and have them tell all their other friends and people in their industry that you did right by them. And then you're also going to be there for, you know, the next sale. And, you know, it kind of builds upon that. And in my career, you know, I've done this numerous times over, but, you know, I've got one where this customer that I've sold to, you know, my last five companies, every single time I've come up with a new product, started a new company, you know, I could pick up the phone. This gentleman would be willing to take it and understand whether it was a fit for him or not. He was going to give me honest feedback about it. And 9 times out of 10, he would either beta test the product or, you know, to the point, because of the trust we've built in that relationship, he would take a flyer on me. Obviously, you know, the economic side of that equation would always work out in his favor, because there's the first mover status and, you know, kind of that early adopter. But really, when you have that kind of trust, you have those baked in people where you can just go and call. And if you're, you know, just starting out, you may not have that Rolodex, but you're going to start building it, because you're going to have it through your career as you go. You know, and I know that, you know, that's just one quick example. There's plenty, and I'm sure you have a few that you could impart, but.
Oh my gosh. Listen, I think in the industry, at least the way that I've known it, is called a bro deal, right?
Yep.
A bro deal is that individual that you've, you know, that customer that you've built up a relationship, to your point, right? 2, 3, 4 products on different companies, where that person knows that you're going to, that if something goes wrong, you're going to do it right.
That's right.
And because they know that, and you have proven that, they are okay of taking that that calculated risk on you. And it's more than a risk. It's more of that relationship. They understand that. So it's, I mean, I have just like you, right? I mean, customers around the world that I personally have, I can call tomorrow with a new gadget or a new product, and they will take a first meeting. Yes, part of it is to actually rekindle the things that we've done, but he generally looks at it and looks at, where can I fit this product for sure? Now, let me ask you this. So when it comes to, you know, why customers buy, right? You and I were customers at one point. Mm-hmm. And there's two things that I can think of that are truths. You know, and what I mean, the truth is, no matter the industry, this is the truth. And it's, you know, take it as a gospel. I will say, number one, customers absolutely hate change. They hate it. It's we call it the status quo, right? Where sales engineers have to go in and challenge the status quo. You know, why change if it's working? Or maybe it's not, you know, the pain is not enough and it's okay, right? And then the second one is, and I hate to call it this way, but no one gets fired or ever got fired from buying IBM or buying one of these brand names that are so monolithic,
yeah,
that you know that their business is not going to go wrong. What do you think? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, customers absolutely do hate change, right? We're creature comforts. You know, most customers are, you know, unless they have a pain that is going to be greater than the pain that they're experiencing with the incumbent, you know, they're resistant to change. So you have to help them understand and, you know, kind of bring them through the glass and so they speak, you know, let them feel the pain, then heal them. You know, people probably get fired for buying IBM today, but yeah, mm-hmm. You know, it old adage is true, right? The incumbents have a leg up, but you know, that's where I like to say the challenge starts as a sales engineer, right? You know, being that challenger brand and having that new innovative technology that you may have to displace them, you know, yeah, it's the old adage. I think it does hold true to some extent, but if you're doing your job, you know, that's the one you can definitely, you know, take and change. And at some point, you know, if you're doing your job right and you become the new IBM in your industry and hopefully no one's not displacing you, you're keeping your protected position. But yeah, those two definitely hold true. I mean,
you, as we were building this episode, there's a topic that I asked you a question. You know, I hate to put you on the spot right now, but because it's the first time I heard the terminology, right? But information asymmetry, you know, what does that entail for sales engineers?
Yeah, I mean, it's this concept of, you know, information imbalance, right? So really, you know, the asymmetric information equation is, you know, there's some typically some form of disbalance of information or information failure where, you know, one half of the parties and involved in a transaction will know more about the solution than the other person. And oftentimes, you know, it's going to be that the seller has a greater knowledge of their product than obviously the buyer. And that whole dynamic is imparting that knowledge back onto the buyer so they feel just as comfortable and that they're making an informed decision. You know, oftentimes, if you look at every economic kind of transaction, there's always some form of information asymmetry that is involved. And it's just it's an economics concept, you know, it's probably a little beyond, you know, the typical 101 sales type of stuff. But I just kind of look at it from that dynamic. It's like, yeah, if you understand how to balance and tip the information warfare into your advantage, then if you get it done right, your buyer will have as much information or more about it than you do. And if they are now in control, feel comfortable, and will move into the kind of purchasing decision matrix, you know, so to speak, right? And, you know, the decision matrix, I think, is probably easier for people to understand because, you know, how and why people buy really break into, you know, the old classic four areas, right? I mean, it's obviously, I think, to most people that, you know, price is number one, right? You know, people look at the dollars and cents. Price sometimes is the top line factor and mm-hmm. there's a certain amount of money to spend. That's it, right? Yeah, I think the second one is kind of maybe, you know, think about it as quality, right? You know, is the product worth what you're being asked for it to be purchased for? And, you know, am I going to get that delivered value from that purchase? Mm-hmm. You know, and then, you know, in a competitive world, you know, there's choice, right? I mean, unless you're selling the newest, coolest widget on the world, there's going to be a plenty of choice, right? So customers are going to have their benefit of that, and you have to tilt that choice in your favor. And the last time, you know, I think it kind of just sits out there as convenience. And, you know, people go for what's easy. And if you make it really hard to do business with you where, you know, you're doing transactions through a channel, if you're thinking about it, you know, from a frictionless perspective, and if someone can come to the website, drop a credit card, and purchase the exact same product and have it delivered, you know, in essentially as a service or, you know, at their door the next day, you know, that convenience is going to win out. So, you know, that said, you know, if you think about it from that perspective, you know, I like to think that there's that intangible that maybe sits behind this, that if all those are equal, you know, something's got to break that tie. And I mean,
to me, that's, you know, I would call that the equalizing, you know, thing that is with all this stuff, which is the relationship between the customer and the buyer. Would you agree?
That's it. Kind of teeing it up there for you. I've put the softball out there for you, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the great equalizer is always going to be the relationship. And that's the reason why, you know, you have to understand why and how customers purchase, but you got to understand the customer and you got to build that relationship because it absolutely is the greatest equalizer.
Well, and I feel, you know, in a lot of the, you know, now that we're in episode 14, which is this episode, right? We've talked a lot about, you know, where to be, where not to be in sales campaigns and whatnot. You know, there, you know, something that is equally as important as that relationship is understanding again why the customer will not buy, right? And I think it starts with this. It starts with there is no pain, right? Mm-hmm. Pain is not about, hey, I don't like my product. Pain is not about my product doesn't do this. You know, the good sales engineers have to be able to understand and walk that pain and really pick on it and be able to understand, well, what is it that you don't like about that pain? When you don't have a pain in an opportunity, forget it. You're not going to close it, right? Particularly with that customer. Other things to consider, right? Of why people do not buy, you know, they found a better price elsewhere. You know, sometimes this is called a price bomb where you have 2, 3, 4 competing products that say they do exactly the same thing, but we're better in the performance, but half the cost, right? So customers will see that as a price, as a big issue and be able to actually head that route. Other things to consider is when the consumer doesn't understand the value that you bring to your product and equally important when they do not know what to buy. I mean, if you're just talking about the features of your product and not showing the value that it's going to bring to the organization, and it takes research, right? You have to research how do you get the value in, but that comes about doing discovery with the customer and whatnot. But if you're just talking features, forget it. Now, what are some other ones that you can think, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the three you just laid out are perfectly valid, but you know, there's the one what I like to call analysis paralysis, right? Where you've given the customer so much information and they have so much to consider that they don't have any clear guidance on where to go. And they get in the situation of trying to decide what they need to purchase and they just can't come to a decision. And so it really almost ends up becoming a do nothing incorporation win because, you know, they'll take the easy answer of not doing anything. And that analysis paralysis is the antithesis mm-hmm. of over information sharing, right? You have to understand what you need to identify. You really, like you said, get past the pain, eliminate the no's, and then understand and deliver the value of the product. But then get them to that decision criteria so that they're not stuck in analysis paralysis forever. And if you can't do that, you know, they will run out of time sometimes and have to stay with the incumbent. You know, there are people that have budgets. You know, we're talking about Q4 here. You get to the end of the quarter, sometimes it's to use it or lose it. And if you can't make that decision timely and get that decision purchased by the end of the year, some people are going to lose those funds, especially some of the public sector, you know, inside mm-hmm. the equation that money's gone. And it's just a negative consequence of why sometimes people don't buy. And, you know, the last one I think is pretty obvious. If you're not providing excellent customer service, you know, people, you know, again, it goes back to that relationship. If you're not servicing the customer or not being attentive to them, the next person who's giving them a little bit more love is going to win the deal. Or if you were the only person there, they may say, you know what? Yeah, I don't do business with people I don't like. And that poor person's customer service will, you know, you could have all the rest of the things in the line and that can still kill the deal for you.
Well, it's funny, right? Because I'll talk a little bit about a story on the poor customer service. I had a sales engineer one time that, you know, for some reasons, AEs, you know, or sales reps like to, I get it, right? You know, they have a quota and they say, hey, let's not waste our time on this opportunity because they don't have a lot of money, right? And sometimes rookie sales engineers will take that mantra sometimes and be able to actually almost treat the customer inferior, right? You know, almost like, you know, everybody should be treated the same, whether it's an enterprise, multi-billion dollar organization or someone that is, you know, at a lower tier, right? Because this world is a small world and all it takes is for that person to be migrated or moved to another position where you're going to see them again and he's going to remember that.
Absolutely.
So you got to make sure that you're treating everybody with the respect that they deserve and be, you know, continue to over excel on your customer service, not go 100%, 150%.
You couldn't be more right, man. You know, there's numerous cases of that happening throughout our careers. And I know just, you know, a customer we had in our past, you know, they're lonely system administrator, you know, now a director of IT at a very large university. And it's like, you know, the person that no one would care about, no one would take out to eat, you know, cause they didn't have the purchasing power. You know, they knew what was happening on the ground. You took care of them. You showed them love. You were there for the service after the sale. They move up in their career, you know, 5-6 years down the line and, you know, they're in the full complete driver's seat. And it's that customer service that, you know, again, gets you the rest of the meetings all the way up the stream. So for sure. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the reasons I think we run into too is people don't understand, you know, how features work, right? And this is where, you know, the service with the sale has got to come in, whether it's, you know, providing professional services and training, you know, enablement, going through the POC. You know, again, just because you have the greatest product in the world, you know, best product, best marketing, best people, you know, you have to bring it all together and you have to impart that into the customer again. So it's that information imbalance I was talking about with, you know, information asymmetry there, where if you can't get them to understand the features and the value, it's still not going to win the deal.
And it's 100%. I mean, every sales engineer that is listening to this podcast right now should be thinking this. If you're in front of a prospect, you should do everything in your power to ensure that the features that you have in the product will, you know, that the consumer will need it. That is not how it works. So it's leading with that story and be able to say, hey, this is why this feature, you must have this feature, right? Let them tell you that they don't want the feature or they don't need it. But if you're constantly pushing for that, you're for sure, you're going to get positive movement on that opportunity.
Yeah. It goes back to the pain too. If you understood that there was pain and you identified that pain and then you can relate to that pain, you know, you're now the aspirin seller, right? And, you know, people need aspirin sometimes. They don't know if you need vitamins.
Right? What about relationships with account managers, Dave?
Well, again, it's a great equalizer. So, you know, relationships are key. The relationship is why people buy it really at the end of the day. I mean, price, quality, convenience, all those other things we talked about earlier, they're there, but that relationship is still, you know, the greatest thing. And you're saying relationship with the account manager. I say a relationship with the account team, really. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. you know, the sales engineer, the account engineer, you know, account executive, the professional services team that's going to get involved, you know, they're all a part of that. And that relationship is key. And, it, you know, it's before the sale, it's during the sale, it's after the sale. And, you know, that's how you build customers for life. And, you know, at the end of the day, you really got to remember that the customer's got to get something with it too, right? They're not just mm-hmm. getting a product. You know, I always ask myself when I'm working with a customer, especially my champion and the customer, what's in it for the customer? You know, what's their personal win? You know, are they going to get a career advancement out of this if this project goes successful? You know, am I going to keep them? They're going to keep their job. I mean, are we finding money in their budget that is going to allow them to keep headcount around and they don't have to lay people off? You know, there's a lot of reasons what the why is, what the win is, but you have to identify that win, you know, and if you can identify what the win is for your customer and you're championing that customer, then, you know, you most likely will get the win and get the sale. And it's a big reason why people buy. The customer doesn't always think about it though, from that perspective. You have to really kind of help them understand you're going to make them look good.
I agree. I mean, I couldn't agree more on what is the win for the customer. If I put myself into my customer's shoes when I was a customer, there was many occasions where I felt like playing poker with sales teams. And what I mean by that is, I mean, I didn't tell them the actual win, right? And that win could have been, like, for example, I had a project where, you know, I used to own the mainframe. I used to own AIX boxes and Windows servers, and I had to consolidate backups for all those platforms. They were using different platforms. The win there was that if I didn't reduce the OPEX, we would have to let people go. Now, it's not a win that as a customer, I'm going to tell to any manufacturer that comes in. I'm not going to say, oh yeah, I need to reduce money because I don't want to fire people. That's why building that trust is important. Because ultimately, as that SE is building credibility, as the team is building reliability, and I know that I can trust them, I can then tell them this is the reason why. And understanding what my personal win is as a customer, it's key for closing that deal.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I guess the last thing I'd leave with too is, you know, for the sales engineers involved and even some account executives that may be listening to our wonderful podcast here. Yeah, you know, there is a point when the deal is won to stop selling. Yeah, you know, I have seen where people just, you know, they have this magical checklist in their heads. This is everything I need to do to win the customer. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you know, I can tell you from the customer side, I've been to a point where you had me sold, and then someone will keep trying to sell me after I've already been sold, and then they'll say something and opens the door back up, like, oh, I didn't think about that. And then, you know, especially when they bring up something like, well. And this is why we do this better than the competition, where it wasn't on the table, it wasn't relevant. And I'm like, I didn't even know about your competition, but thanks for bringing it up. And I should understand what mm-hmm. they do. So, yeah, I understand when you have the sale and when you have it won, and you know, having that relationship with the customer and the buying signals from the customer well understood is there. But you know, just know you can oversell.
never assume you won until you have the PO. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that's kind of our top down for this episode. We hopefully it gives you some good insight. We really want our listeners to be just as successful in Q4 as everybody mm-hmm. should. And you know, we look forward to seeing, you know, everybody be on our social media telling us, you know, how you're hitting your numbers and blowing out your results at the at the end of the year. We obviously we're gonna have a kind of our recap holiday show. It'd be awesome to hear. Yeah, as we bring in some listeners for that show, just you know, some success stories. So if you have some, you want to share your story or what worked, what didn't work for you, you know, please feel reach out to us. You can contact us through our website at salesburrito.com or hit us up on social media. Again, this podcast drops weekly on Wednesdays on all your favorite podcasting platforms available, and also available at salesburrito.com. So my friend, and until next week, any parting words?
Of course, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing. Have a great day,
everyone. Have a great one. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the Sales Burrito Show. Be sure to subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.